Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And my guest is Bradley Coates. He's returning for, I think, the fifth time on this program. When I had a radio show in Hawaii, he was my most frequent guest over a five-year period. Welcome to this program, Bradley.
Hey, aloha, Diana, and aloha, listeners.
Yes, and he's saying aloha because if you've heard him on this program before, you know that he is a resident of Honolulu.
Lucky me.
And Brad is the founder of Coates & Frye, and it's Hawaii's largest divorce law firm. And his book is now in its fourth edition. But before I tell you about his book, and we're going to talk about some aspects of it, I want you to know that Brad and I go back to 1999 when his book was first published, now in its fourth edition, as I may have mentioned. Divorce with Decency. He was interviewed in the Honolulu Advertiser, and I called him up and I asked him to be on my radio show, and he said yes. Are you just a guy who can't say no, Brad?
Certainly not to you.
You know, you and I both know my lover and Brian, and he plays the song from Oklahoma. I'm just a girl who can't say no. You know that song? Because he thinks it's my song, and it probably is, at least when it comes to him. But I'm glad you can't say no to me, because I really, really enjoy having you on the program. You're entertaining, and you're informative. And now you have the fourth edition to this book. And the thing that's really so great about it, there are many things, but it includes invaluable information on can your marriage be saved and love and the internet. So you've really updated your book, Divorce with Decency, the complete how-to handbook and survivor's guide to legal, emotional, economic, and social issues. And I think you had fun updating this book.
Fun writing and rewriting this book because, although frankly the divorce law does not change as dramatically, there's some changes that needed to be added into the legal part, but what really changes is society. I mean, this book has now been going for, I guess, 15 years. And I rewrite it about every 3 or 4 years, and society seems to do some cartwheels in between. So it's the argument could be made that society's doing a real 180 right now with so many fewer people getting married. We could maybe do that another show on that, but certainly the impact of multiple serial marriages and the ripple effects of that on society is fascinating. And there's no Surgeon General report that tells you, like they did with smoking, oh, you smoke now, you're going to get cancer 30 years later. I mean, this is really a fairly bold experiment to change the whole restructuring of the marital institution that American society has always kind of hinged on. Mm-hmm. And now it's changing radically and really fast.
Really fast. And we thought we'd talk today about this evening. It's this evening in New York. It's a little past noon where you are. But the beauty of internet radio, we can talk from different time zones as long as we have a landline. So that's all good. But we wanted to focus today on what are the impacts and aftershocks for the divorcing parties, because it really, there are different effects of divorce on men and women. And you chronicle this very well in your book. Let's talk about sort of an overview first of the impacts. And I really like when you say, Confucius say, time of change equal time of opportunity.
Yeah, and that's entirely true. I've probably seen this Coates & Frye firm that I run over here in Honolulu. I've been doing this for 35 years now as a divorce lawyer, and we've probably done well over 20,000 divorces. I've got 10 lawyers that work here. We process a lot of people through this, so I get to watch an awful lot of people going through it firsthand. And it definitely has some major ripple effects. Let me just set the stage a little bit by giving a little data on this. The median age for divorce the time when people tend to get divorced on a median age basis is early to mid-30s. I mean, specifically 33 for women, 35 for men. Those are the median ages for divorce between the two genders, 35 for men, 33 for years old for women.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The median age for remarrying is a couple years after that, 34 for brides on second marriages and 37 for grooms on second marriages.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Men get remarried a little faster and a little more often than women do. About 80% of all men and about 75% of all women will eventually remarry. Most get remarried within about 3 years. For example, within the first 5 years, about 43% of men get remarried, about 33% of women get remarried. And by the time you've gone out 10 years, it's about 70% of all men and about 50% of all women that have gotten remarried. So people don't, at least until fairly recently, now the big rush to get married or remarried may be slowing down, but at least until fairly recently, people haven't sought perpetual singlehood. They tend to want to get back on the horse and ride it one more time and opt for a second marriage. So there has been that dynamic in society, although, like I say, it may be slowing down.
Yeah, you talk in your book about men re-up and take another stab at marriage. And why do they do this, do you think?
Well, men seem to need women. They seem to need a stable relationship, marriage or what have you, but basically a woman to take care of them, which is a pretty pathetic thing to admit as a guy. But but men do seem to feel that they want a woman in their lives. There's some interesting stuff that you wouldn't expect about how men actually are sort of first in and last out. You know, there's the FIFO system of accounting, first in and last out, and men do the sort of the same thing. Men fall in love a little more viscerally. They tend to fall for women, for physical attraction reasons, which is something that women are less prone to do. They tend to be the first one, oddly enough, to say I love you. Usually a couple months into a relationship, whereas the women sort of stall off on that a little bit longer, and they're faster to get remarried. I mean, married guys live longer, seem to have better physical and emotional health. I mean, it may be that guys need wahinis to look after them. Like I say, it's kind of an emasculating admission, but that seems to be the case.
Okay, Brad is saying wahini, and for those of you not living in Hawaii, that means women. Wahini. Yeah,
that it does.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, men do need women, it's true. And even with sexual relationships, men seem to do better with ongoing, regular, marital sexuality. And women do better only if the sex is really good. I mean,
I guess female
types have, we have higher standards or something.
Well, I don't think there's any question, but that for women there has to be an emotional component,
yes.
or it's not only not fun, but it's kind of gross. For men, men can overlook an awful lot of things if they if they're up and going, so to speak. And
if they're getting laid regularly.
Yeah, that's right. and it's amazing, and maybe the quality control drops a little bit in the process. Another thing that's interesting on this is if you're talking about how divorce is going to affect men and women differently, a lot of it depends upon the age that somebody is at when they get divorced.
Right.
For younger women, up through their women that are in their 20s, their 30s, right up till about 40 years old, women seem to adjust fairly rapidly. They're still young, they're still pretty, they're attractive, especially to older men. They've got a deeper pool to draw off of. Men aren't going to start, necessarily dating older women, but women can date older guys, and so the demographics like double. A lot of times you'll find that women will have entered into a marriage, maybe sort of a youthfully indiscreet or not as well thought out kind of a marriage. They marry their high school boyfriend. They marry because they got pregnant. They marry for, whatever kind of reason young folks get married. But they sometimes those marriages don't prove to be perfect. I mean, women, we all know that women mature faster. Sometimes the, you know, sometimes the guy who was the life of the party dancing around and, you know, drunk with a lampshade on his head and, you know, that everybody thought was so funny in high school and college, you know, that gets old if he then doesn't get a job, doesn't get a house, doesn't prove to be a supportive dad, or he's still going out and partying, when the wife is trying to raise the kids. You know, for a lot of reasons, you know, women sort of grow beyond their men, and sometimes they are in a position where they are more attracted to and more attractive to, you know, older men. So for younger women getting divorced, you know, they can bounce back pretty fast. It's for older women that getting divorced that have got, you know, a little bit more of a problem. There's less of a talent pool for them to look at. And, you know, they're not as attractive to the older men sometimes as are the younger girls. It can be trickier. Similarly, for guys, if guys get divorced while they're young, like I say, women getting divorced young, they kind of bounce back. Guys getting divorced young have a whole different set of problems. You know, they may lose their kids and be paying child support for kids that they rarely see. The wife gets remarried, moves away, and the ex-wife by then, they're paying child support. They, you know, getting stiffed on visitation. They're having a harder time getting set on their feet as far as jobs and financial security. And that can be tougher. So ironically, it's older men and younger women that have sort of a better shot at remarriage, and younger women and like I say, and older men and younger men and older women have a tougher time.
Indeed. And in your book, you have a great quote. Lady Astor, I married beneath me. All women do.
Yeah, well, there's some truth in that.
Yeah, and you do. I just want to go back to older women for a minute and focus in, because that's with my gerontologist.
Yeah, you could be one someday. it's not imminent, but yeah.
Thank you, Brad. I'm telling you, one thing that keeps me young, even though chronologically I am definitely an older woman, is that I have ongoing really hot sex with Brian, and you know, we have such a good relationship, so that makes all the difference. But I don't want to get into my personal life, although I was very personal just now, wasn't I?
Could sound like bragging. We wouldn't want that.
Oh yeah, I've been known to do that. But you encouraged it, Brad. You but you talk about older women, and their entire identity often comes to an end if they are an older woman when they divorce. And it may be difficult for them to re-enter the job market. And you even quote a rather depressing statistic from the Census Bureau that a single woman at 40 has a 40.8% chance of eventually marrying. And what is it for remarrying? It's also not terrific.
No, it's definitely tougher for gals than it is for guys. Although that can be temporary, because women ultimately bounce back better as they age than do guys. I mean, that's more of a geriatric kind of a topic, but older women seem to fare better than do older guys, just as they progress through the later decades of life. But there's definitely an issue where women face more, you know, forced flux in their, you know, in their lives sometimes than do guys. I mean, if you get a situation where, you know, the guy has still got his same job, he's still got his same social and financial context within the workplace, you know, he can keep his life somewhat stable. The women oftentimes are, you know, really thrown, especially if they devoted all their lives to raising kids, they're thrown for more of a loop, and it can be a little more shocking. Women just definitely get hammered more financially by a divorce. So, it's a more problematic period sometimes for older women, at least in the period initially, following the divorce, than it probably is for guys. Although women seem to do better like I say, at kind of putting a different spin on their life to get it later on. You know, women have always been, you know, in the junior league and the book clubs and the social networkings and the PTA and the, you know, I mean, they, you know, all through their early lives, women are, you know, more collective group oriented and oftentimes participated more in those kind of things, where guys have only had, you know, sports and fraternities when they're growing up and going through college, and then their professional linkages as they're growing, you know, older until retirement, and then they retire, and all the ground is cut out from underneath them if those are the only linkages they've had, because suddenly that's all gone. Whereas women, like I say, have been forming these social groupings and networks all the way through their lives, and they may adjust much better later on, with or without a divorce.
And it has to do a lot with resiliency, which you write about in your book. I really think that resilience is the coping skill people need more than anything else. I can speak personally here. I've had way more chapters, and you knew my late husband, Charlie, in Hawaii. I've had way more chapters in my life than I ever thought I would have, and it has to do with my ability to be resilient. Think of a rubber band bouncing back. I also think that, you know, one sign of good mental health is to have a high tolerance for ambiguity. And I'm fortunate because I do. There's ambiguity, but I'm going to meet it. I'm going to greet it. I'm going to embrace it and see what happens. So it's an attitude of some adventure and acceptance.
There's an interesting top 40 song on the radio right now that some of your listeners may be familiar with called Carry On, and it's exactly that. It just says no matter what comes at you in life, just carry on. The refrain is carry on, and it is really really true.
Who sings it? Do you know?
I do not know. I mean, I should know. Maybe Kings of Leon or somebody. I don't know. It could be a theme song for what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. You also write, as long as we're on older women and resiliency and all of that, that they have multitasking skills, and you know, this has to do in part with the brain, because women have a bigger corpus callosum, which is the connecting tissue between the right and left hemispheres, and I think we were made that way because, for instance, if we're having sex and we have a baby, we have to be able to hear the baby cry. And so, but some women, I've noticed often, women who have trouble with orgasm, for instance, they're too busy multitasking. They're not really being present when they're being sexual. And so they're not getting as much pleasure out of sex, but I digress. Let me go back to...
Well, women are definitely better at multitasking. I mean, there's no question about that. And like I say, that's part of what I was saying earlier. Guys have been so focused on just, you know, a limited number of agenda items, you know, their career, their colleagues, their business life, whatever. Of course, nowadays, women are out distancing men in business, too, so some of this analysis is dated. But, I mean, still, you're talking about guys that are sort of hardwired to do sort of one thing at a time and be sort of single-focused. And when they lose that single focus... they've got a problem, and women can adjust much, much better.
Yeah, I used to work with a physician in Palo Alto when I lived there, and Dr. Walter Bortz and I did some studies on aging and sexuality. But he was a geriatrician and an internist, and he commented that he signed death certificates for a lot of men around 65, and they had retired, and they were so used to being Mr. Vice President of such and such bank, and then they were at home with their wives, and the wives were saying in one way or another, honey, I married you for better or for worse, but not for lunch every day. Get out of here. You know? But these men would get depressed and were much more open to heart disease or cancer because they didn't have a full life other than their professional identity.
Well, there's no question about that. I talk a lot in this book about the difference in the speeches that I give, especially to older audiences, the transition, the key transition that men have got to make as they get older, especially as they retire, from being somewhat single-minded competitors to being connectors. Mm-hmm. This is a little lengthy, but I mean, when you think about it, here's a quote from the book. From caveman days onward, guys were designed to be physical, to literally be warriors and not waste a lot of downtime on introspection or emotion. This gets reinforced all along the way as young men compete at everything from making sports teams to climbing the corporate ladder. So what most men want to do when they hit middle life is to stay put, stick to their old habits. They don't really want to make what Gail Sheehy calls a passage to something new and different. So it becomes a harder passage for them. They can become increasingly dependent on their wives for financial help. I've got another phrase that I use in the book called the Save Your Life Wife.
Yes.
And it turns out that mm-hmm. married men from ages 45 to 64 are twice as likely to live 10 years longer than their unmarried counterparts. So, I mean, really having a wife to help take up the slack in the household income, to kind of keep you exposed to a more diverse range of hobbies and things that she does, because she's born to connect. That can turn men around, as opposed to a guy that just sort of goes into his cave and mopes for the rest of his post-career life.
It's something related to this is a study that the Kinsey Institute did in early 2012. And it was an international survey, and of course you can do this now with the internet, it's just amazing, of more than 1,000 middle-aged couples who had on average been together 25 years. So the researchers measured each partner's relationship and sexual satisfaction on a number of variables. And, some of the findings were obvious. So sexual functioning, for instance, was strongly related to male sexual satisfaction. But there were a few other things that were unexpected. And one striking finding, and this is to borrow from the report's own word, striking, was a very strong connection between a man's relationship satisfaction and his frequency of physical intimacy, but not physical intimacy as in sex, but physical intimacy as in kissing, cuddling, and in general, and not necessarily sexual caressing. So the odds of a man being happy in his relationship increased by a factor of 3, according to this Kinsey study, if he snuggled up regularly. I think men get a bad rap, because here you got guys who really like snuggling up.
And the women definitely like snuggling up. I mean, what you were saying earlier about, sex not being always a pleasurable experience for some women,
mm-hmm.
The term I heard that I just love is, focus on outer course. And it really is true. I mean, a lot of women prefer kissing and holding hands to actually mm-hmm. having to, show off a naked body in daylight and, whatever, I mean, there's a lot of different issues that arise for some people with the actual sexual act that are not there, the negative ones, if you're just, holding and feeling close to somebody. I think there's no question about that is a hugely important aspect of romantic relationships. And everybody can at least snuggle.
Yeah. With the marital counseling that I do, I will often give homework to the couple where they're just meant to sit on a couch, maybe watch a movie together or a television show together. I like some of the ones where they can laugh, too, like Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart's Daily Show, because laughing is so good for the relationship. But I ask them to hold hands and maybe rub each other's feet while they're sitting on the couch. Certainly make out. Kiss. A lot of people who've been married a long time forget about what a potentially religious experience kissing can be. Like, most of us of a certain age found that to be true when we were teenagers.
When that was all you could do, that's right.
I know.
Spent a lot of time focused on kissing when you weren't allowed to go any further anyway. It became a real art form.
I know. And a lot of couples need to get back into that. So my homework often is about kissing and more holding hands and more snuggling up and all of that sort of thing. So, In 6 minutes, we're going to go to a break. But before we go to the break, I wanted to talk about, go back to older men, and you had referred to competing. They go from competing to connecting, and you actually quote billionaire J. Paul Getty, who was married and divorced 5 times, and you have a quote in your book, and I have a quote from, I don't know, from sometime in the past, about, from him. But your quote is, a lasting relationship with a woman is only possible if you are a business failure. My quote ascribed to J. Paul Getty is, I would give up all of my wealth for one lasting relationship. And that was quite a statement for old John Paul Getty to give.
Thank God he didn't, otherwise L.A. would be short of a very wonderful art museum.
Yeah. No, it.
But, no, it is, you know, I mean, there is definitely the issue about, you know, the alpha males that are the most hard charging in business, and whether that ties in, you know, with testosterone levels and with their, you know, with their maybe, tendency to push harder in all arenas and including maybe, you know, excessive womanizing. There was a study that was done by Napoleon Hill called, I think it was Think and Grow Rich. It was a study of, you know, successful American alpha males in the early stages, the industrial titans. And all these guys, when surveyed, said that the strongest desire in a man's life was to please a woman, several women, or you know, multiple women, or women in sequence, or whatever. But I mean, that drive of, you know, I've got to impress the girls is I think a bigger issue for guys that are, you know, that are hardwired to impress everybody and everything else. You know, I mean, these are the guys that want to conquer the world and they want to conquer women at the same time. Conquer is probably a bad word, but you know, and sometimes it is rooted in a desire to just you know, impress them, love them, whatever, and maybe after that they move on. I, you know, like I say, there is a serial problem in the way these guys operate, whether it's taking over new companies or going through marriages or whatever. But you know, you see a lot of these business titans, you know, Ted Turner, guys like that, you know, that have, you know, they've been married to wonderful women, but they, you know, they go through them.
Well, and Ted Turner, he went through Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
And she's a pretty remarkable woman.
A great book to read. Her book written when she's in her, I think, early to mid-70s called Prime Time. Have you read that book?
I read it and underlined it thoroughly.
I think that's a great book.
She probably gets help, but anyway, it's very well researched. It's a very solid book. Prime Time by Jane Fonda. And it'll give you lots of ideas. I mean, as a gerontologist, I was just absolutely fascinated with the book. And I love it, of course, that at age now, she's 74 or something like that, that she's had a boyfriend of some, sounds so silly to call, you know, older men boyfriends, but anyway, for want of a better word, that she's still sexual. And, of course, I'm convinced, and I'm on my bandwagon as much as I can be, that to remain a healthy older person, you need to remain sexual. And
no question. I mean, you pound that drum like you were leading the band. There was an interesting interview that was conducted in support of her book. I think she was on Piers Morgan or someplace I saw her, where she, and you know, Piers, who always asks the questions about who, you know, where, have you ever been, what is it, truly in love, or, you know, appropriate, I forget the way he phrased it, but, you know, she talked about her having been married to Roger Vadim and, you know, Tom Hayden and Ted Turner. I mean, she'd been married to all these fantastic guys, interesting guys anyway. And he asked her, if you had to go back and remarry one of your former husbands, who would you pick? And she goes, I wouldn't pick any of my former husbands. In fact, I wouldn't pick, she said, if you had to be on a desert island, he's, that was his question. And she said, I'd pick a bunch of my girlfriends.
Uh-huh.
And she's not, and this new guy that she's with is, you know, they're not getting married, or at least haven't so far. And
yeah,
the point, the point being, and it goes back to how women adjust better in later life, that, you know, they're almost better bonded with their female gal, you know, gal friends in their sewing circles or their book clubs or their community service groups or whatever than they are with males at some point. And that has a lot to do with demographics. You know, the average age for widowhood is a shockingly young 56 years old. That's the average age for women to become widowed, and a lot of them are becoming divorced even earlier than that, and a lot of them are having to learn to live on plus, you know, from a geriatric standpoint, gerontology standpoint, they all live longer, you know, 6-7 years longer. So the reality of it is that women are going to spend a lot of time, you know, grouping together, bonding with other women, especially as they get older. And guys don't have that support system. They're just not instinctively, unless they've learned to really go switch from competing to connecting, they don't have that other group of guys that they connect to, like I say, once their business buddies, and colleagues disappear, you know, maybe they make some fishing or golf friends or whatever, but it's not on the level that women connect. And that's a huge difference in how people recover from divorce. It's a huge difference in how people age, and it's the main reason why guys tend to want to get remarried. I think they almost sense that they need a woman to take over that element of their life, because it's not guys' strong suits.
Oh, you say it so well. We do need to go to a break, Brad Coates. And
I said it well, but too long. Okay.
No. We'll come back and continue this fascinating conversation. I hope the listeners are finding it equally fascinating. We'll be right back.
Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore, ma i tuoi piedi
This is Dr. Diana Wiley back with Bradley Coates, the author of Divorce with Decency, and we're having our usual lively conversation about his book and the many things he writes about. And you can get more information about Bradley at coatesandfry.com, CoatesandFrey.com. And Brad, I guess your book is also available on Amazon.com?
That it is.
Good.
That it is. University of Hawaii Press put it out here, but it's a nationwide release, so it's all over the place.
Fourth edition. So, I find it so interesting that you quote people like Dr. Stephen Johnson of the University of Oregon, and he's doing research in the area of divorce and mental health. And to quote him from your book, there's no doubt about it, men take divorce much harder than women. Divorced men seem to have higher rates of mental illness and suicide than do divorced women. Men are less apt than their ex-wives to seek any kind of professional counseling. It's obvious, according to Dr. Johnson, that women come to get help much more often than men. I'd guess 9 women for every man. Based on my experience, that's about right.
That's been my experience, too. Women are like 10 times as likely to seek counseling as guys are. Which is, again, it just shows that guys have kind of got a closed-in sense of these things, and they just can't bring themselves to expand their horizons.
Dr. Johnson also says, you know, they usually know when they're angry, but they can hardly ever admit to grief. And I remember years ago, as mental health professionals, we joke, but it's got an element of truth to it, that men really identify with 2 primary emotions, sexual desire and anger.
True.
And that women have this much broader range of emotions. And it probably has to do with how we're raised as children. But there are men who are enlightened. I certainly put you in that category. I put Brian in that category, too. There are men who are enlightened. But again, we're back to divorce maybe being a time for opportunity. And you write about questions come up. Who am I? What do I want to be? What are my values? And how can I have a more meaningful relationship in the future? These are really important questions.
Yeah. There's no question that it's like anything else in life. You want to learn from your experiences. You don't want to keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. But guys are slower to delve into this. It's viewed as being sort of anti-male, I think, to spend a lot of time worrying about introspection or, you know, your emotions or whatever. I my father, who was an Air Force pilot in World War II, he would have never spent any time agonizing over any of this kind of stuff. He was just a man's man. He'd just go out there and, macho, it's a war, I'm going to go do it. He was 18 years old. It's
wow.
Incredible. These guys, they got steeled early on, a lot of them, and there is the tendency to try and promote that in males from sports teams and everything else. But it's a different world now. Women are starting to out-earn guys a whole bunch of the time. And so there's almost a bifurcated kind of a situation. On one hand, when you talk about the impact of divorce on women, there is the potential for what they call the feminization of poverty, because, women oftentimes have not had pension plans, they haven't got health insurance. I mean, I'm just talking about what I see in my office every day. They sometimes have to physically relocate, they're back living with their parents. I mean, it can be a real shocker for women on many levels as far as the physical discombobulation. But for guys, like I say, that's why they immediately race out and find another wife. In fact, a guy won't even file for divorce usually unless he's got some gal that he's got his eye on or has her eye on him or whatever. But oftentimes the main reason for guys to file for divorce is because they've already got another woman waiting in the wings. Women will file based on, the real reasons, lack of communications. I just have this uneasy feeling that this isn't really all there is to life, whatever. And they'll act on that. A guy would never act on the fact that he felt vaguely uneasy in his marriage, As long as he's got his easy boy recliner and can watch E-SPAN and sports, he's okay in a marriage, even if it's, not a great marriage. He limps along. But women, that's why women file for divorce about two-thirds of the time.
Two-thirds of the time.
Yeah.
Boy, Brad, the way you describe some of these guys is, they sound a little shallow.
Well, it's...
Some of them.
It's a problem. I mean, and like I say, when I give, I do a lot of talks, to various audiences, and, I feel like I'm gonna get shot for being the messenger sometimes, because the guys are sitting here giving me these sort of piercing looks, when I talk to couples or whatever. But this really is kind of the way it plays out. It's interesting how it plays out in the actual filing of a divorce. If a guy files for divorce, oftentimes, it will be a smoother process because the woman will sometimes acquiesce. I mean, I'm not saying that we're back to the days of subservient wives, but oftentimes women, rather than fight about the money, their primary issue is, I just have got to do what's right for my kids. I got to hold on to my kids.
Yeah.
And as long as they get custody, they'll get hammered sometimes on property settlements. I see cases where guys will feign, who don't really even care about getting custody, will feign a custody case just to exhaust the woman's, financing and lawyer fees and emotions. They're trying desperately to hang on to custody of her kids, and then she hasn't got anything left, no ammunition left, legal or otherwise, to fight for the property settlement. So if a guy files first, sometimes a woman will say, okay, just give me my kids and get me out of this. If it's a woman who's filing for divorce, the guy does what guys do. Is his primary, what did you say, the primary emotion's anger. I'm pissed, I'm gonna give her a hard time. It's a much more difficult processing of the divorce when a woman is trying to leave a guy than sometimes the other way around.
Kind of
embarrassing to be a guy if you've done this work as long as I have for some, 35 years.
One reason your book is so fascinating is you look at everything honestly. You talk about women, the good news. The National Center for Women and Retirement Research produced an interesting study. And one bit of information is that 82% said they experienced, with the women, new independence and strength after a divorce. And that's been my experience, too, in the counseling I've done. I had one woman about 45, and she was working hard, working through her divorce and all of her feelings. And she had some fears, and I asked her, what is something that you have feared in the past? And she said, I have feared water. I don't know how to swim. And I said to her, I think it'd be such a great idea if you learned how to swim. She did, and her confidence built. It was just amazing because she faced her fears about water, got some swimming instruction, and learned to swim. Plus, it was very good exercise for her.
It's funny, you know, just sort of as an aside, my wife is Japanese, born in Japan, never learned to swim as a child in Japan, and I taught her to swim several years ago, and now it's one of her favorite things to do.
Oh, so, and I love your wife. She's so smart.
Swimming's a good thing for the body and the soul.
Yeah.
Going back to that study you were talking about, the National Center for Women in Retirement, here's another interesting factoid out of that same study. 77% of all the women surveyed said they valued independence and privacy over remarriage. So, it may be tougher for gals to get remarried, but they may not care all that much.
Right.
What's really happening is that a lot of women are, I talked about it, I think, on one of your prior shows. The British have a term called free males instead of being free of males instead of for females. Free males. They just don't want to marry guys. A lot of times, especially with women becoming more economically independent, they don't have to get married for all the same old reasons that gals used to in the Leave It to Beaver era. And so now you've got women making their own choices. They've often overachieved beyond men in the first place. And, sometimes, but for sperm donors, the maternal desire doesn't seem to go away. Even amongst the real hard-charging female executives, they're still anxious to have kids. Not all of them, of course, but that's pretty hardwired in women, I think. But, other than that, I see an awful lot of women, they just, they get married, they get pregnant, and then they get to sometime around age 40, mm-hmm. when they feel that they're, their princess days or whatever are kind of coming to an end. They've got that vague sense that, that things are maybe not that their glory days are not quite what they used to be, physically or whatever. And they then sort of take one last chance at trying to get divorced right at that stage and then see if they can't put something better in place. And sometimes it's another marriage, one last stab at another marriage, or sometimes it's just taking off and being single on their own. But it's almost like women are right around age 40 seem to be experiencing kind of a midlife crisis. It's kind of a fun, fascinating thing to watch. I see all these women sort of trooping into my office right around that age group, ready to get divorced. I hadn't noticed that until fairly recently.
Yes. And then we have another thing that happens around 50, and you chronicle it in your book. Around age 50 is when many women can begin to take off big time. Numerous studies have shown that women in their 50s frequently show greater gains in inner harmony, life status, and overall well-being than at any other time in their lives. I was, when you wrote about that, I was reminded that in India, women can't even become politicians or have any higher level job until they're postmenopausal. They don't trust women until they're postmenopausal. And
that's interesting. I didn't know that, but that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think that's true. A lot of women do come into their own sometimes. Well, going back to the 40s, I experience this, and I've seen women in my practice and friends, they have aha moments somewhere around 40. And then 50, yes, as you write so well, they begin to take off big time in their 50s.
Well, you see it all over. I mean, you watch women from, the Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady, Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton. I mean, they're all the latest one. I don't think she's, I don't know how old she is. I don't think she's quite 50 yet, but she could be approaching. Is this Sheryl Sandberg and her book, Lean In?
She's much younger.
That's so popular. Women are taking charge. There's no question about it. Another interesting statistic that as of 2006, 51% of all American women were living single. And undoubtedly that percentage has gone much higher since then. But you know, there are more women living single in America than there are married. And there are more people in general of both genders, in America now, that are unmarried than there are married American adults. American adults are now, only 48% of American adults are now married, 52% are unmarried. That's the first time in American history that, you know, I mean, when you and I were growing up, 80% of everybody was married. That was
just
the deal. And now there's a whole bunch of different tracks you can take through life, and people are taking them.
People are taking them.
And female people are taking them in particular.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, when I counsel, and most of my practice is relationship counseling, marital counseling, but I see that couples would be happier and more fulfilled if they changed their unrealistic expectations. Have you noticed that in your... It's just that they think that their spouse should fill every single need. I mean, talking and laughing keep couples together. Shared goals keep couples together. But the glue that holds couples together consists of many things, I think, you know, laughter, companionship, tenderness, and sex. But sometimes we want to just expect everything from our spouse, all of those things, our eggs in one basket.
And it used to be, of course, that, you know, up until this last century, you know, you stayed together for the kids, and you know, you raised a couple of kids, and you were in your late 40s or your early 50s, and then you look forward to dropping dead in another few years. So nobody
looking forward to?
Nobody was living to 80. So you didn't have to do what Margaret Mead and some of the other sociologists have talked about, Helen Fisher, about conceivably having to look for new partners as, you know, for each new decade of your life as an elongated lifespan led you to have new interests and new things. Now the expectation is, you know, I want to go climb Mount Everest. My wife, a damn well better be able to come with me. And, you know, not everybody can climb Mount Everest. Or, you know, now they get expected to keep up on the golf course. Or I want to travel. The exponential explosion of different options in life, and expecting your spouse to be right there with you side by side on everything from socialization to athletics to sex to, you know, health issues. Holy cow, it's a tall order.
It's a tall order. And then I wanted to discuss at the other end of the spectrum, there are some feminists who are now in their 60s with regrets. And I wanted to quote Vivian Gornick's extraordinary What Independence Has Come to Mean to Me. So she fought for decades on the front lines of feminism. And then she, at 65, she is holding a coffee cup and staring out the window at the same New York street she's lived on for 25 years. She's alone. And in pondering this solitude, she writes, and I just, it's just a really poignant and beautifully expressed sentiment, and here it is. The reality was that I was alone, not because of my politics, but because I did not know how to live in a decent way with another human being. In the name of equality, I tormented every man who'd ever loved me until he left me. I called them on everything, never let anything go, held them up to accountability in ways that wearied us both. There was, of course, more than a grain of truth in everything I said. But those grains, no matter how numerous, need not have become the sand pile that crushed the life out of love.
Wow.
I
didn't know who she was exactly, but I have heard that quote before, and it's amazingly well written, and it's you know, probably somewhat true. There is a real issue, and lots of studies seem to be sort of verifying this, that although women are becoming so much more successful and so much more powerful and so much more economically and powerful in business and financially and every other way, they do seem to be less happy. And, you know, there's studies that show that, you know, I mean, women have, in the name of women's liberation, and I'm a big fan of strong women. I'm married to one. I've always really admired strong women. I try to work with them. I want them around me. And I think that's one of the, I mean, like I say, I'm married to a Japanese wife, and one of the things that's just crippled Japan is that the Japanese women are so much stronger than a lot of the Japanese men, and the society holds them down. They really need to liberate. The best thing Japan could do would be to liberate the power of its women. Anyway, I digress. Yeah. The point is that, you know, I love to see strong women. I love to be around them. I think they're really inspiring. But it's almost like by taking on all the extra stress that they have done now in professionally and et cetera, that they have like I say, they've pushed themselves into midlife crisis that used to be the prerogative of men. And they're dealing with so much more stuff because guys really haven't picked up the slack on you know, child care. I mean, more and more you get Mr. Mom doing, I think one in five dads is now sort of a Mr. Mom, underemployed while the wife is making the most of the money. And so you've got guys stepping up to some degree, but still it's mainly a woman's ball game to the child rearing. It's mainly a woman's ball game as far as running the household and doing all the heavy lifting on the chores and the cooking. You know, guys are getting better at participating, but they got a long ways to do to catch up. So women have ironically taken on all this extra stress. They're making a bunch of the money. They're doing, they're really, you know, carrying the heavy weight. And it's almost a windfall bonus for guys, because guys are reported to be happier than they used to was. And women are, and in later life, sometimes these studies are showing them to be less happy. So it's kind of a weird, ironic, result that women have asked for all this power and now they've got it. And then they're cursed with some of the stuff that goes with it. So. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I've observed over the 30 years that I've done this counseling work that the happiest relationships either are pretty egalitarian or they evolve into more egalitarian relationships. And you write in your book, Divorce with Decency, under Sex and the Second Marriage on your page 275, you quote a clinical psychologist, Robert Kirsch, "I don't think two people can have a good sex life if the marriage is unequal. Sex is the second language of behavior, and it's important to pay attention to its message." And you also write that more people seem willing to work harder in the second marriage, including on their sex lives.
I knew you'd get sex in there somewhere.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, this show is called Love, Lust, and Laughter. I mean, you know, I got to talk about
that.
No,
but it is definitely true. Sex is generally better in second marriages. That's been documented pretty well.
Yeah, it is. And people know themselves better. And if they're a little bit older, a lot of the guys slow down, and they actually like foreplay more, and including emotional foreplay. They're more comfortable giving their female partner compliments. And the woman is better about speaking up and saying what she wants and needs and desires. And so in a nutshell, the man becomes more romantic if all goes well, and the woman becomes more assertive if all goes well. So it works out in the bedroom. And, it's a good thing.
There are other things that don't work out as well in second marriages. Sex definitely takes an uptick, usually.
Right.
But you do have a higher re-divorce rate in second marriages than you do in first marriages. I mean, mm-hmm. the actual divorce rates, as I think I mentioned to you on your shows before, but for new listeners, 45% of first marriages end in divorce. Those odds rise to 65% for second marriages and all the way up to 85% for third marriages.
Mm.
And the re-divorce rate does seem to be higher for men than for women. So, and you've got one of the things, sex may go up, but some an area of marital satisfaction that goes down in second marriages often pertains to stepkids brought into the marriage, second marriage from the first marriage, and the divorce rate's literally 50% higher in remarriages that include stepchildren than those that don't. So, there's a lot of trade-offs. No matter where you are on this cycle, you've got to work your way through it. And it's like you said, it has to do with resilience. It has to do with an ability to be willing to change. It has to do with what the song that I was talking about says about just carrying on. You've got to handle yourself with a certain level of maturity and a certain level of forgiveness and a certain level of adjustment. Or you're doomed to keep making the same mistakes over and over again.
Yeah, and the phrase that I use from way back when you were on my program in Hawaii, I love the phrase, learn and improve. Learn and improve,
yeah.
That's your phrase. Keep your eyes open. Divorce doesn't have to be a failure if you learn and improve. And I've quoted you often about that. And we're going to hear more from you, Brad Coates, July the 23rd, when you'll return to this program. And I'm just delighted about that, of course.
I, too, am looking forward to it. I love talking to you, and I hope your listeners get a lot out of it. I sometimes hear from folks that have heard us on this show, and let's keep doing it.
Let's
July
keep
23rd,
doing it.
Everybody. Tune back
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bradley Coates. Next week, Dr. Nancy Dreyfus, author of Talk to Me Like I'm Someone You Love. She's been on this show before. We're going to do part two next week, so please tune in. Bye, everybody.
Telefonerai probabilmente a me tuo schiavo d'amore. Ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare?